So hi, welcome to the Good Noise Podcast. I'm Shane.
I'm Glory.
And we're here with...
I'm Woody, and I'm from the band Polar.
And we're asking some questions today about their upcoming album, Everywhere, Everything. So congrats on that, by the way. How do you feel about the response to the announcement so far?
Yeah, it's been amazing. It was hard to really kind of put it like into a feeling, because for ages we've had this album and we've been quite quiet on like social media, so you never know your place. It still exists if you disappear for that long and then you come back with something. So yeah, it's very overwhelming. It's amazing to like see people really connect with it. And it feels like the hard work has kind of had a bit of a payoff, which is good for everyone. I think, you know, that's good for morale. Like, I think all the time we were doing the record and we were in the pandemic and we really pulled away from social media, and I think that was about 2 years. You know, self-esteem and like mental health really takes a knocking in those periods, because you just don't know what's on the other side. So now we've released stuff, it didn't sink like the Titanic. So I'm very, very glad that that hasn't happened. And people have actually, you know, said a lot of kind words and really got on board with it. And I feel that some people are really connected with the songs, like really found like something inside them that they're like really sort of found like emotionally connected to them. So yeah, it's great. It is really, really good. And it feels amazing. And it's nice to actually sort of see them sort of flourish.
That's fucking awesome.
Very happy to hear that. Album rocks.
It does.
Oh, thank you very much. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for your kind words, Slate.
So it sounds like, based on what you said, this was like your pandemic record, kind of?
It was fully done in the pandemic. Okay. So we, in 2020, we were on tour in Europe with Spirit Box after The Burial and Make Them Suffer.
Nice.
And pretty mental tour. Yeah. The mental thing about that is Spirit Box were opening.
now they're selling out those rooms pre-sale.
now they're playing arenas with Ghost. So we, obviously the pandemic happened, and we were actually like, I think it was like the 20th of March 2020, and we literally got the message that everything was getting cancelled and we had to go home, and we went home and it was all very chaotic. Once the like dust had kind of settled and that, it was the decision to make a record. Now, to do this record, we had a brand new lineup. We had a new rhythm section, which is made up of our drummer Noah C and our bass player Gav Fain. But we'd never written a record before, and I think a lot of it is like from the previous records we had done. So obviously, we have done four records with different lineups. It's the ability to make chemistry happen in a room together. We had that taken away from us. So not only were we making a record for the first time as the group as it is, we were also like having to like adapt to learning how to make a record without being in a room together. We've literally played three of those songs like together. and not a note was written in a room together. So I know all the other bands were doing this, and you know, it was interesting. You know, I was following like Bring Me's Journey. You know, they were doing very similar things. But for us, it was a bit foreign, and it was like, cool, we're gonna have to learn how to do this. So it was really tough. It was really tough because we tried to put a 6-month limit on it, in regards to like make the record, record the record, have the record done, release
That's
the record
happening.
While like, the pandemic's going, and build your interest, get people on board, pandemic finishes, you go on tour and everything's happy ever after. Mm-hmm. That didn't happen. The record took 2.5 years to make.
Oh my god. That's a little longer than 6 months.
It's like 2 years longer than 6 months. we picked a producer, and he was in Wales, which is like right down the bottom of England. We, during the pandemic, got banned from crossing borders, so we couldn't go to the studio, couldn't record there, and it was a really like the way it started, it was excitement. Like, this was like the first time that these two new guys who had joined Polar were going to make their mark. You know, they had their like opportunity. And there was a real like excitement, you know, although the world around us was just on fire and like burning. It was like, cool, we're doing something. We're being creative. We're using our time well. But it got harder and like definitely a lot more difficult as the record went on, because it misconstrued like messages in WhatsApp that like someone had written something and it might have been very innocent towards an idea or a part, but you can't show that on like emotion via a WhatsApp. So there was a lot of confrontation on certain parts, and because it went on and on and on, and it was like, we just want this record done. But I feel that, you know, for all the weights and strains we did go through, there were some real like real highs with it, because I personally believe, and I think everyone in the band will agree with me, that this is our best record to date. Like, we've tried to do this kind of record in our previous record Nova, which I love, but I don't think we hit the nail directly on the head. This one, I think we've got very close, if not done that. So although it took forever, and it literally took everything out of us, we all, you know, there was a huge struggle with mental health, there, and then at the same time, I guess with being in a band, you kind of do rely on a little bit of the outside world to kind of feed you a little bit of interest, because if you're kind of like getting that little interest from the people outside perspective, it kind of keeps you going, like, oh cool, these people are still into us, like they're still listening to us, you know, they're still writing messages. But we went quiet on social media, and that was supposed to be the 6 month bracket as well. So like, it was like, the record, we'll do that in 6 months, we'll go quiet, it's cool, people have seen a lot of us, we've just done a huge campaign for Nova, which was our previous record, we can afford to go quiet. And it was a case that we were like in a rock and a hard place, because it's like, we don't have a lot to say, and the things we do have to say are about a record which we're trying to not tell people about, because it will have better impact and it'd be more interesting if we can do something different to what other records have done. But obviously that went on and on as well. So we were never getting any feedback. Like, it was like, we were just kind of sort of stuck in purgatory with like, we're doing this record, we've got to get it finished, we've got to do this. Like, nobody's like, you can't really sort of see any like messages because we're not writing anything. Yeah. So it's like, it was really kind of strenuous at times. And it's like, now we've come out of it, like, obviously for the pandemic, and I'm sure it was the same for you guys, after a while they obviously eased a lot of the restrictions, and we got the ability to go back into rooms together, like into like studios. We all have like little home studios, we were going around each other's houses, but like, relationships changed, like they do change. And I think the major thing with the pandemic that I can really sort of look at from the musical side of thing is like, we went into it in like a certain like connection and a certain mindset, and we've come out very different, and that is no fault of anyone in the band. Everyone's just gone through a massive life-changing situation, which is mind-blowing. So I think that we had to come out of it, when we started getting together, we had to rebuild a record and we had to rebuild our relationships. And if I'm honest, I think those relationships are still being rebuilt now. Like, it isn't all like high fives and hugs all the time. Like, you know, we've been through a lot, and I think it's hard being in a band at the best of time, and then obviously you add all this on top, it's like, this has like real strain and pressure to people's personal well-being. So it was a real lesson, a real education about the human connection, which is fundamentally what a lot of the lyrics are about.
For sure.
Probably answered about a million questions then. Sorry, and I will talk. I've been doing these like every night, so I'm kind of like bang, 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 bang.
Yeah.
So tell me to shut up. I will just keep talking and talking. So
it's okay.
That's cool.
But since we're on the topic of the writing process, like, I'm curious how you guys kind of created that spark, with it being new first record with new people in the band and like everything socially distanced. How were you guys able to like make that spark?
I think that this came from the music, because we had like two very accomplished musicians join our band. Now, nobody that's been in previous members of Polar haven't been accomplished. These guys just had maybe something different to offer than the previous guys. And that just meant that there were new, fresh ideas on the table, and fresh perspectives. With these two guys that had been close to our band without being members before, so they'd watched the band as from an outside perspective. So suddenly they were brought in as an inside perspective, and they're like, how about this? How about we do this? Yeah, I've been listening to your band for years. We could do this. This is different. you know, so that spark was purely kind of like ignited by the fact that there was like ideas and things being put in front of us that we had never done. We put a blast beat, a death metal blast beat in one of our songs. Like that's, like if you had told me that that was going to be on the record, I probably would have laughed at it. Like, we're not going to be doing that. That's ridiculous. But it's on the record. And then you can go to other songs which are just like very shoegazy and very like post rock. And so like, but this was cool because when we were doing it, like those ideas were coming out and it was like, before maybe we would have been a bit like, is that us? Oh, is that the band? Whereas in the pandemic, we were like, well, we'll make it the band. We'll do it. We'll work around the idea. Yeah. We had time to play with these ideas. These ideas were put in front of us. If it didn't work, it was never like, cool, that was just a waste of time. It was more like we tried something and it didn't make the right aesthetic for the what we wanted. But to, like Gavin and Noah are really good at, like they were, definitely trying to keep the perspective of trying to keep what Polar's sound was, but maybe think outside the box with it. It's like, you guys are cool, you've got this kind of hub, this sound that everyone kind of like latches onto, but let's do the things around it, let's see what we can really add to it, you know, add to the mill itself, you know, like you've got your basics there, but like we can maybe do things that might catch people's ears a bit more, or be like, cool, that's very different for them, like that's, they've done something there. But those kind of like changes came with challenges as well, because I guess from my perspective, I changed a lot with what I did with my voice. And I'd done four records, well, like I say four, like three and a half of just heavy screaming, like pitch screaming, but it was like screaming. And then all of a sudden it was like, we're in the middle of a pandemic and they're like, you should sing. And I'm like, all right, okay, cool. Let's make this like even harder, like, and like that really kind of proved as a more of a challenge. But luckily they were bringing some really good material, well, great material to the table that allowed me to be able to explore that, and I had the time to kind of go away and work out how to do it, and via lessons, via speaking to other people, because it was foreign for me to do something like that. Although it is doable and I have done it. It was like, at the time, it's like, cool, like I've done this for so long. My body just wants to go like pedal down 100 miles an hour, make that heavy as possible, blow your throat out. That's the craft of my art. And then it was like, suddenly I've got to learn how to relax and not do that. And I've got to teach my body to be like, cool, let's not go like we're taking down the house. Let's go a bit slower, you know, let's enjoy the ride. And once you started, like we started doing things like that and started like knocking like nails on the head with it, it was like, cool, this is a spark, this is cool, like this is different, that's a spark in itself. When you do something, when you reinvent your own will, it's like, cool, this is cool, this feeds on to something else. And that helped that process kind of move along, because it was like, cool, this is cool, well maybe we could try something like that somewhere else, or maybe we can try and take that philosophy that we've added into that song and maybe like update this song with it. So it opened doors.
That makes sense. All right.
And I know you mentioned that this album process went from 6 months to 2.5 years. Throughout that process, what song took the longest to write, and which one is your personal favorite off the track list?
Wow. Which one did take longest? The longest one to write is the Deliverance. You guys have heard the record, haven't you?
Yes. So
Deliverance. Now, I'm the problem, I guess, with this is like, not apart from like close friends and family who are bored of our record, like to death, because they've had it for quite a while. We as a band probably don't like that song, and everyone seems to love it. And it took forever. And the reason it took forever is because everyone had a different structure.
Oh.
What was happening is, like, during the process, we were working out of a Dropbox, and we were just uploading like project files onto like whatever music programs we were using at the time, like Cubase, Logic, Pro Tools, uploading the process. And then everyone would like fundamentally go away and then do their own particular like structure of the song. Well, this is how I hear it, you know, this is what I'm gonna do in the chorus. This is, and like 9 out of 10 times there was like always a mutual, Like, cool, yeah. That very similar to that. There's Deliverance, never. There was a point where it got so bad that we didn't talk to each other for a month.
Oh my god.
So that's like, why there was it strain. Took so long.
It took 2.5 years because we were so and that wasn't like out of anger or like it was probably more out of like frustration that there was no middle ground. Mm-hmm. We were like, we were sitting on something. Like there's the middle eight riff, which is probably one of the heaviest moments of the record. Mm-hmm. We had that and we were like, that's just too good to waste. And I think everyone at the back of their mind was like, this isn't right. This is too, yeah, this song doesn't fit. Like this doesn't complement that bit. This, yeah. And it was like a lot of this going around, mm-hmm. around, around. And then it was like, eventually, like a couple of people like in the band had to just be like, you know what? Do what you want. If this is the way it's going to be, like it's going to be, like, yeah. You just have to rest your laurels, put your cards down. It's cool. Like we just have to get it done. Maybe some people in the band aren't so happy how that came out. And then like we finished it and then I show people and everyone's like, that's the single. And I'm like, it really isn't. Like that's been the headache we've had for like 6 months. But yeah, I'm still proud of every song on the record, but that one, that was a hard one. That was a real, real tough one. And I think if we had any longer, I think we would still be probably arguing about it now. and in regards to my favorite, probably Baptism of Fire, which is the last track,
mm-hmm.
Because I fundamentally did a lot of different stuff with my voice on that. And that's interesting for me. That was like a real cool interest point because it's like this is us reinventing our will. Like mm-hmm. this is us opening a new door and being like, we could do this. We could do this in other ways. We can do like suddenly like the polar like box got a lot bigger with that. Mm-hmm. And I found that quite like inspiring, like to go forwards in future writings is like that. Gave me confidence as a singer to be able to do that stuff and then be like, maybe we can do more of this. Maybe this does work. Because yeah. Like when I approach that kind of song, I'm like, I don't know if I can do this. I don't know if I can sing like this. I've not built a career doing these moments, having songs like this. So when we kind of did it and it was fun, it finished and it came back, I was like, well, that sounds really cool. Like it gave me the confidence to be like, we can maybe explore these avenues a bit more musically because it opened doors, which is a great feeling. It's like, cool. Like we've done something different and it doesn't suck.
Hell yeah.
So even with all of this like headache and frustration, would you try writing separately again for like the next record?
Probably not. No.
Yeah. No. That's what I thought.
I think that was the one thing is like we had to act and like write accordingly to basically what we were being dictated to what we could do, really. Mm. I think if the world had stayed the same and like the pandemic hadn't happened and all the lockdowns hadn't happened, we would have probably written the record in a room together.
Mm-hmm.
Would it be in the same record? Probably not. Like I think the frustration and the like the restlessness and the anger and the all the stress we put ourselves through that made the record.
Mm-hmm.
On reflection, that really drew out those parts of us that necessarily wouldn't have been pulled out if we hadn't had to been put through such a vigorous task.
But
there were little things in it, those situations and those processes that I did take away and be like, well, maybe we can do certain parts, you know, maybe we don't have to always be in a room together. Like maybe there are points when we can be like, we can just do this over a Zoom or everyone can do this in the comfort of their own house. There's certain little things we learned that we could do that if we hadn't had the pandemic, we wouldn't have known about. So there were little, like, as I was saying to someone the other day, like little pockets of sunshine in a lot of rain. And those little pockets of sunshine were like, kind of little bits of moments where we're like, we could potentially use these in future writing situations.
For sure.
100%.
And I appreciate how open you've been, like, not only about like how difficult the writing process itself was, but like the turmoil that you guys were going through, like as a band. Like it could be so easy for you to like act like everything was fine, you know, but I appreciate like you giving a lens into what was happening between you guys, you know.
I was thinking about this before, like about 2 months ago, because I knew a lot of these kind of like interviews and questions were going to come up. And I was like, I watch a lot of bands, like interviews. I read a lot of bands interviews. And there's always a degree, because you've got to go into it positive, because you're promoting a record. Like, you want people to listen to that record and take it away, make it their own, have a great experience with it, connect with it. But like, in my head, I'm like, people need to know that this is not plain sailing. Like, we are fundamentally a ship in a very choppy sea most of the time. And like someone said to me, yeah, like, do you think the band will die? And it's like, death looms over our head 24/7 and it won't go away. Like, your mortality as a band will sit there and it will sit in the back of your mind, like, any moment this could end. And during the pandemic, any moment that could have stopped. There could have been a point when we just went, you know what? This ain't working. Let's just cut it. But we did gladly and very happily we didn't. But it does have an incredible strain on like the on people's well-being and mental health. And I don't think that gets talked about enough.
No.
Like, being a creative, like, you have to, you pour your soul, like every inch of your body, every drop of blood in your veins goes into that. And like, that is a draining process, because you're trying to give everything. And then like, if it doesn't feel like it's working, it's hard. If you don't agree on something and you feel like you're butting heads and you're not agreeing on moving forward, well, that creates stress. And it's like, everyone wants the best out of it. But sometimes it's like, you can't find that route out to find the best way. Mm-hmm. And it has incredible pressures on it. I mean, we're super proud of everything we've done with the record, but yeah, it really took it out of us, like all of us. And as I think I said earlier, like, we're rebuilding those relationships. Mm. Like, I'd love to sit and tell everyone that it's sunshine and rainbows and we're having the best time and life's a beach and, you know, the sun's always shining, but it really isn't. Mm. Like, when you overcome one challenge, there's another challenge to overcome. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You jump over one hurdle, well, you've got another 10 hurdles to keep going. Mm-hmm. And for us, it's like, we are now hungry to survive and progress. And whatever we achieve, wherever we go and whatever we do, I feel coming out of it that every single one of those achievements is going to be a real, real victory to us, because I'm under no like false illusion that this at any point could just be like, you know, this is done. Like, someone's been pushed to their edge. Like, this is, yeah, the relationships between us, they'd never remolded. Yeah, all of that was a very big possibility. So I think I think it's important, like I want people to, like, younger generations to come and join bands, and I want them to go out and I want them to experience it, and I want the new wave of bands to come out. But I want those bands to realize sometimes that, you know, it's like, you're going to achieve great things. You're going to have those real highs. You're going to, you know, write the song that everyone loves. You're going to play some of the biggest festivals in your career. But it's not all like party time. You know, this is not the 80s. You're not in Guns N' Roses. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, money's tight. Like, like, gigs and tours are very hard to do currently right now. Mm-hmm. And you just have to make me realize, like, take care of yourself, like, think about your mental health, like, put yourself out there, put everything into it. But your well-being, personal well-being is super important. And I think that does just unfortunately get overlooked, because everyone wants to portray the perfect image of like, I'm in the sickest band and everything's really cool. But they're sometimes scared to show that side, that they are vulnerable, that they do suffer, that you know, when you read those bad YouTube comments, that they do affect you. You know, when you see your band's like plays slightly lower than the band, you know that, you know, it's like competition. Yeah, it's all of that stuff can affect it. So like, I just think it's important that gets spoken about more and gets highlighted.
Absolutely,
completely agree.
So how'd the track list for the album come about? Did you guys write the opener be the opener, closer be a closer? Did you shuffle around and see what fits? What was that process like?
We had some time on our hands, so when we what happened with it is we wrote the songs. Each song was written. So like every song was like a little like milestone for us. Cool. Well, that song's done. Like on to the next. Let's get that song done. Like there was parts where we were chopping between songs. But I think it was only when we kind of got the songs back, we were like, well, that feels like the beginning. Mm-hmm. That feels like your middle. That like, I guess we always try and make it like where the album, it feels like you're on a journey. Yeah, it's very Lord of the Rings kind of esque. Like, yeah, you're going to be on those high moments and there's going to be like some drop downs. So yeah. We tried to consciously make the record feel like that journey was being made. Mm-hmm. And we used songs to make that journey possible. So like songs like Rush, Everywhere, Everything, Baptism of Fire, Winds of Change. They obviously have the vastly more melodic, like soundscapey drawn back bits, but we were like, cool, we need to blend those together with the heaviness, like the real, like You'll Dissolve Me, like Deliverance. So it was kind of like, where do we know we need to use these songs, but like whereabouts would we use them? You know, do we use like Everywhere, Everything at the beginning and we use Rush as a late, you know, it was like mm-hmm. kind of just like taking pieces and being like, does that work? Cool. Yeah, maybe not. Like, would that work? And like transitions as well, that's a big thing for us, is like, how does that song transition into that? Like, could you have like this song and then that bleed into that? Is that going to make sense? Yeah. Because otherwise you're going to have like a song that's got a lot lighter and then all of a sudden it's like gone back up to 11, but there's mm-hmm. no real time for someone, a listener, to digest what's going on. So we're trying to make those like transitions between songs to make sense. So it does give you the listener a bit of like breathing time and space to be like, cool, well, this is a change of tempo, or something's changed here, or this was like, that's the lighter one. So yeah, there was just like a multiple different kind of track listing of versions, and then eventually it was like, well, this one works. Mm-hmm. When you listen to it, this is the kind of flow we've been trying to achieve.
That makes sense.
For sure. And you mentioned the title track. I want to talk on that for a second. Did that come first, the title of it? Did you name the album after it, or did you just kind of take the album title and name a song after it?
We named it the album afterwards.
That okay. was
the song. Yeah, so the song was the song.
Okay.
And then we had to think of an album title, and that was really difficult. And I think that was like to the point where everyone was like, I just don't know. I don't know. What do you want to call it? Like, yeah. What have you got? And then, like, everything was like, because the album is written about like human connection. Now, when we were in the pandemic, I went back to my childhood home, and my childhood home backs into a lot of woods, which I used to play as a kid. So I started going back there, like going for walks with my friends with their dogs and stuff. And that was like the trigger about like times, like how time was changing things, like connections between people. Mm-hmm. And like, so we got this kind of like theme running through the record. And then when it came to like the album, it's like, well, everything kind of symbolizes it. Like it's mm-hmm. like that time feeling, like to be everywhere and to be everything, like that kind of symbolizes or encapsulates what the record feel like is given now. So yeah. Yeah, so it was kind of like we went back to it, and I think it's just quite cool. Then obviously, like a massive, great, big Hollywood film came out that happened to give the same title, and and we're like, oh shit! And I, to be honest, I hadn't seen that film, and it was a great film. And,
oh yeah.
The time, and I was like, oh god. So a lot of people are like, did you get influenced by that? Is that where you got it from? And I was like, I didn't even know that film existed. I just had written this song. And then we just thought that the title really kind of resonated through the record well. So yeah, but it was just it was more of an afterthought, opposed to being like, this is what the album's going to be called. Should we have a track that titles to it? So,
okay. Gotcha. Makes sense. So how do you recommend your fans to listen to this album for the first time? Should they play it in the car with friends, dark with headphones on, should they blast at a party, work out to it? What do you personally recommend?
I say listen to it by yourself with headphones, mm-hmm. because I think people, what I would like from people to get out of this album is like, it's like facing up to the fact that things have changed in a relationship sense between people.
Yeah.
So, and I generally believe some people, a lot of people haven't like faced that change yet. They're scared of it. because with change means a complete change of life, like a change of and a change of relationship. I mean, it might mean that your best friend 4 years ago, you've done that, you've veered off, but you don't want to accept that. Like, no one likes to accept change sometimes when it doesn't mean it's like a natural change or it's a change that's something that someone wants. So like with the record, I think if you listen to it by yourself, I'd like people to try and have like maybe come up and face those ideas that their human connections with their loved ones and their friends might have changed, and like explore that through like the connection in the word. So like, yeah, just like a one-to-one. But like, there's some party songs on that record. Like, you could put it on at a party and it wouldn't like completely like bleak everyone out and make everyone leave. So no. So yeah, but I think for a first time thing, I think just have a one-on-one with it. There's a lot in there to digest. So yeah, I think if you're by yourself, you'll probably make that like digestion a lot more clearer than it would be if you were with people. Then 100%. Listen to people afterwards, and then show those people, and then they can show more people, and then
exactly.
That's how it spreads.
Yeah.
So this question should be super, super quick. Off the top of your head, I want you to describe this album for new listeners in 3 words, no more, no less.
All you need.
Ooh. Oh,
nice.
That's good. That was really good, actually. Didn't expect that. It's good. So in the same vein as the last question, but not as much pressure, is there a certain feeling or emotion you want this album to invoke in your listeners?
Yeah, I want it to give it should give you a feeling of hope, because the stuff I sing about and that I've written about is like, yeah, things have changed, situations have changed, people have like come and gone, people have unfortunately left us for life, but whatever happens, you can make it through. And that's what this record reflects. It reflects a feeling of hope. Yeah. Because as I said earlier, at any point this record could have just been like, you know what, we're done, let's just not do this, but we didn't because we had hopes and dreams for it. So I want that to be a resonance to what people get out of it. I want it to be seen as a picture of hope.
It's awesome.
I like that a lot.
So what is your favorite memory that you made while creating this album?
We went and lived in a place called Cardiff, which is in Wales, when we finally were allowed to go to the studio. And we basically got an Airbnb, like a 9-bedroom house, and we used it as a hub. So in the days we would go and record like and track the album, and then in the evenings we would just kind of live in like a bit of a family. We have a longtime collaborator called Ellie Price, and she's on Rush. You'll hear her mainly on that. She's on every record. And she fundamentally, sometimes she's a lot higher in the mix, sometimes she's a bit lower, but she writes with us. She's just as much of a member of the band as we are in an album sense. She doesn't tour with us, but she was there as well. She came with her boyfriend, who's also a musician. And it was cool because like most nights we would have dinner together, and then we would just have like the demos and we were just going over them. And it was like, have a couple of beers, have a laugh. And it was just like, suddenly all of the stress and the pressure we had gone through getting to that point kind of left. Like, yeah. That house was just like, this is fun, this is cool. Like, when we got to the end of that process, I generally was really sad. So it was like, that this is what it should have felt like to make the record. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, we had to go through a lot of a struggle to get to this point. And that was like a real high. It was like everyone walked away from that, like, being like, cool, we just kind of just hung out and, you know, having breakfast in the morning. And like, it was just like, and we'd obviously not been able to do that as well. It just like heightened the experience once we were like, it felt like we were being naughty, like we're doing something that we shouldn't be allowed to do. You know, we shouldn't be in the house with 9 other people we don't know. But it was allowed. So yeah, and that gave us the real buzz. That was like the moment when it was like, cool, this record's gonna be really cool. It's gonna be good. Like this, yeah, we've done all right. This is gonna be really good fun.
Awesome.
Makes me very happy to hear that. So for this question, I want you to picture you're on tour. You're at a gas station for a rest stop. You're going in. What is your snack of choice?
Oh, snack of choice.
Mm-hmm.
I'm quite pro. There's an ice cream in. I'm sounding really bad. I'm generally quite healthy. I try and keep myself quite healthy, but there's an ice cream called King Cone in Europe, which is about this big.
Oh my god!
quite addictive. There's a lot of chocolate and a lot of vanilla in that, and a lot of calories.
They don't count on tour.
Yeah,
calories don't count.
Mm. No, you can burn them off late. That's what the 30-minute stage does.
Exactly.
Yeah, like. They are addictive and they look great as well. You know, when the food looks good, like mm-hmm. you're like, I just need to have you, like eat you. You look great. Mm-hmm. And that's the problem is they sell them in every single services. So you're like, maybe one more, you know, it's five too many in one day, you know, like things. That's the kind of situations I've been in. But yeah, so King Co, like generally I'm quite a sucker for ice cream.
Fair enough.
That's fair. Perfect.
So on the topic of food, if the band was a dish, what dish would the band be and why?
Ooh. That's a tough one.
We ask the hard-hitting questions here.
You do ask the hard-hitting questions. I don't know what we would be. Like a burrito. We'd be a burrito because we are literally many layers of greatness. And there's always a little trick at the end of it.
Hell yeah.
I love it. So for these last couple questions, we're actually going to shift away from music, if that's okay with you.
Yeah, go for it.
Perfect. So we're actually going to go straight to death row.
Boom.
So if you're on death row, what would your last meal be with a drink?
Well, it's death row, so it's the end, isn't it? That's like severance. That's like a boom, you're done. Mm-hmm. It would have to be like a glass of champagne and a lobster. A whole lobster.
Oh, you're going out with a bang, yeah.
Oh, yeah, it's your last meal. Like, you've got, yeah. Maximize.
Maybe
I mean, depending what I've done to get to that point, I don't know if that would, like, you know, being quite frowned upon. Like, yeah, you know, he's celebrating with a lobster and a glass of champagne. But, you know, it's your last meal. So, yeah, go all out.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah.
Why not?
So, if you could live in one fiction world for a week, where would you live?
I got hooked on a TV series this year, like hooked, and I'm dying for season two. But I don't know if you guys watched a series called Severance on Apple TV.
No.
Highly recommend it. But they live in, like, the synopsis is that you don't know what your body does when you're at work and it doesn't know what you do when you're outside of work. But they live in this, like, town. And it's all like very picturesque. Well, I guess it's the premise of the show. So wherever that town is, I want to live there. I think it's filmed in like Portland, but like I might be wrong.
All right.
Going to Portland. So I have the honor of asking the last question. Every single person we've spoken to has actually said it is the most important question.
Okay.
What is your favorite color?
Now that's the difficult one. That's even harder. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
I wear a lot of gray, but is gray a color?
Technically, it's a shade, but I will take gray as a color.
Technically, okay. It's a shame.
That's cool. I didn't know that.
Yeah,
I can use that. Can I keep that?
Oh, dude, take it.
Oh, cool. Tomorrow, I have literally. Do you know gray is a shade, actually, not a color? I'm going to be using that. Yeah, but I wear a lot of grey, so if that can work, yeah, grey suits me, I think.
All right.
Perfect.
We'll take
it.
So as Gloria said, that's all the questions we have today. Is there anything that you would like to plug?
Obviously, with the record, Everywhere, Everything comes out on the 13th of January. Just want to say thank you to anyone that does listen to it. Takes time to connect with it. Thank you very much for the great interview and for some amazing questions. I'd love to do it again.
Oh yeah, us too.
We'd love to have you again.
Thank you very much.
All right. Well, thank you for staying with us. It's been Woody from Polar, and we have been the Good Noise Podcast.